Jalen Samuels is the back. Roethlisberger fires, and it's caught for the touchdown. Smith-Schuster.
David. Football. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal, Dave Dameshek. I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Ready to chop it up, the game of pro football, and perhaps more importantly, the game of life with our pals, the Iron Four, here during your sequestration, all your sequestration needs addressed. Thanks to, first of all, the voice of your Los Angeles Chargers. Also doing gangbusters work with his guy, Petros Papadakis. Yeah. iHeartRadio, PMS, track it down. It's Matt Muddy Smith, everybody. What's happening?
Wait, what's happening, Dave? It's good to be back. The Iron Four, I like that. It's a pretty good nickname.
Yeah, well, Steel Curtain's already taken. So, and yeah, as you heard there, it's sure. Time for rejoicing for those who support things black and gold and gold and black, because Ben Roethlisberger's out there slinging the ball around. Maybe we'll kibitz about that a little bit. But
I didn't see that coming.
Well, listen, what I really want to do is the more important matter at hand is after the successful go round a week ago with us on the world of music, I think we solved all questions related to music. Maybe we can dip into some movie talk here. And to join us, as always, to weigh in on all the important stuff from his manse somewhere in Winchester, California, but by way, of course, of London, England. He's our resident Miami Dolphins fan. It's Handsome Hank. How are you?
Hi, Dave. Hi, I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Were you sitting
on that hat before you put it on? Hank,
I need to ask you guys a question, and this is not going to translate at all for our podcast listeners, but I trust you three, maybe with the exception of Eddie.
I'll just post a photo of it. Post a selfie on your Twitter feed.
I really like this hat. Like, I like the design of the hat. It's kind of, it's the old Dolphins logo, which is obviously beautiful, and I can't wait until 2021 when hopefully they'll go back to it. It's on like a denim, like light denim colored, and then it's got the – but. There's something about the shape of the hat that it looks ridiculous on my head. And I don't know if it's my head or if it's the hat. I like the hat. I like the idea of the hat, but I don't think it's executed well. Or maybe my head. There's something wrong with my head.
No, you got a beautiful. You've got a handsome head. We agreed on that long ago.
Is it the brim? Is it?
Yes. I think I think you got to bend the brim other way. Yeah,
It was a flat brim. I've done a lot of bending here, and something about it that
I think you hit it on the head there, Hank. That's supposed to be a flat biller. Flatten that bill out, and then pull it over the top of your ears.
Yeah, but then that looks.
You bought a flat bill hat. As Eddie is laughing hysterically. Handsome, hilarious, you old man.
Handsome turned 31 a few weeks back, I believe, and therefore he exceeds the high-end age to wear the flat brim. You look ridiculous.
I can't wear a flat brim.
Well, you look
but
all right.
I love the hat too much. I love the hat
You can,
too much. The
Hank, hat almost. Actually. No. All you have to do is come down to Huntington Beach and you can wear the flat and you're good. It does not matter how old you are. You can flatten that thing out and you can just roll Main Street in Huntington Beach and you will be embraced. High five. You'll get a nice slurpee drink at one of the bars. You're good.
Drive a truck with a Monster Energy logo.
Exactly right. Little box.
This is a great question. First of all, Handsome, denim is a no, but at least in a glass half full kind of way, at least it's not corduroy.
Do you remember there was a time, like I would say kind of 1991, I bought some of these. I remember, I think I told you guys on a podcast a few weeks ago that the Lions were my second favorite team growing up, partly because of Barry Sanders. I like the colors. They came and played in London in, I would say probably 1991 against the Dallas Cowboys maybe. And they had a corduroy with the old Lions. You know how they had that script, which was very kind of calligraphy kind of thing. Corduroy, like light blue corduroy. I love that hat. I don't know where it is. I need to find it.
It wasn't calligraphy. It had the print Detroit and the Lions cursive. Those were the best hats.
No, ever made. No. Those ones were, but I'm not talking about those. Remember the Lions had like that very blocky. But it was like blue corduroy with in dark blue across it. God, it was a beautiful hat.
I remember exactly, but that had to be confusing for a young handsome Hank who wasn't all that familiar with pro football to see the Lions and the Cowboys against each other. I mean, they're basically because it's like seeing the Los Angeles Dodgers play the Kansas City Royals. They're kind of like that, the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other. They're so similar.
Yeah, okay. I get your point, maybe. On the same line, just very quickly, I've been watching with my kids. Have you ever watched the movie Swiss Family Robinson, the old 1960s Disney movie? Yeah, Disney classic. I watched that with my kids the last couple of nights. I'm very confused because they apparently are in the Malay Peninsula is where their boat is shipwrecked, but they are on an island which has a very broad selection of animals that that don't necessarily reflect what you would expect to find there, including lions, tigers, zebra, elephants, everything that wouldn't necessarily be there. I don't know, the way you were saying about cowboys and lions, I thought that's where you were going, is like, why would cowboys be fighting lions?
I got one word for you, Hank. Pangea.
Pangea, yeah, that's what it comes down to. Well, they try to explain it away with a land bridge, but I'm not sure that a land bridge would necessarily account for the lions and zebra.
When it all broke apart, that one little spot had everything.
Everything.
Okay, is everything pulled apart from one another?
Yeah.
We have to treat spaghetti like our sounding board here for youth. I have a few questions for him related to fashion and otherwise, spurred by Handsome's hat thing there. That's interesting. But I will say, though, a little, how about first of all, to the gang here, to the fathers amongst us. Now we all had hats on. I had my pirate hat.
I'm taking my hat off. Money was just so rude about my hat.
Had your Dolphins hat. Money had, I don't know what that hat was.
It was a Dartmouth cap.
Supporting the brand.
What, the Dartmouth shovels?
The Dartmouth Big Green. That is a that is a tree. If you see the detail there. There you go. There's the back.
It's a nice hat. Awesome. I like
that very much.
Nice. Really comfortable.
And then Spaghetti appears to be paying tribute to the hat collection of Marv Albert there with the not wearing a hat, but
it is so so crooked.
That thing is sitting on top of your head. I find that hard to imagine that's made of human hair. But it's
Lego hair.
It's terrible. She did a miserable job on it. So crooked, but whatever.
Why do you not just shave your head, Eddie?
Because it's been like a week now. It is what it is. Now it's going to start growing back. The sides are getting better. Well,
it's not.
A question of morality more for the fathers here. And then I want to ask a couple questions for Spaghetti. But it seemed like I ran afoul of morality or something, or good parenting, because my current wife discouraged it. And I said, listen, we got to watch, because I told the 11-year-old Jean-Claude Van Damme-ishek, I was like, you know what movie you'll love is he enjoys sci-fi and everything. You'll love The Matrix. And and she said, oh, that's too violent. You can't show an 11-year-old that movie. Sure. And I said, is that right? Okay. Yeah. And then I showed it to him. And then he reported back to his mom that he watched The Matrix. And she agreed. With the current wife, the ex and the current agreed, like, what do you can't show an 11-year-old The Matrix. What do you think?
Any feedback from the future wife as well? Did you?
She's listening right now. She's listening right now. Drop me a line. I won't meet her for another, like, given my rate of success with women, like once a decade and a half or so, one woman from the human species will look my way and be like, I guess, fine.
I guess. And so then you're on the hook for more kids.
That's right.
No, The Matrix is for 11-year-old is too much.
Is it? I mean, I just felt like it was so, I guess, I kind of had forgotten the last part. But the overflow, when he and she go into the place and they have all the guns and they shoot it all up. But is it uber violent? It's just like a bunch
of bullets flying
around, but.
More the existential question that it raises, right? I think that could twist your kid's brain into a pretzel, right? Like, hey, am I living in a simulation right now? Like, is that what this whole thing is? You know, I think that I made that mistake with my youngest. And she still, this was like 4 or 5 years ago, you know, when she started asking me the religion questions, and I presented her with a multitude of options that some people believe, you know, what is the meaning of life? I said, you know, some of people think this is just a big computer program and we're just a giant simulation. And oh boy, was that a mistake. To this day, I still get, you know, Dad, I think maybe I got a glitch in my periphery. I'm like, oh boy, this is that was not wise. And by the way, Dave, if you want to feel better about yourself, my youngest, who is 12, soon to be 13, has now watched, I think in quarantine, A Quiet Place. She's watched all the Screams, which are, you know, to some degree graphic. And so
those are not the word of Sydney, knives being plunged in the human being.
Exactly. So, you know, I guess I'm terrible too, but that happened to me when I was a kid. Like I was a latchkey kid, which nobody knows what that means anymore because everybody's doors are locked and deadbolted and alarmed and all that. But I would roll in and just pop on the old movie channel, which would play R-rated movies during the day. And I mean, I was watching The Hills Have Eyes, I Spit on Your Grave, Phantasm, that all of those horror films at a very young age. And I think I turned out perfectly. So, you know, I think
can't
you're in
argue
good
with
there.
The results. Yeah, I guess yeah. That's true for me too. Yeah, when I was 13 to 18, most weekend nights, Friday, Saturday nights, the parents would go out on at least one of those nights. And both of my sisters, one older, one younger than me, also had social engagements. But Dave and his TV. That's how I spent my weekend nights. And sometimes we watched movies that were a little bit too scary. I would get petrified sitting alone in the house by myself.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
I remember watching a movie called Pet Cemetery. And I had to switch it off. And then the next day when light had returned to the world, I said, all right, now I'm ready to watch this. It turned out there was only 30 seconds left of the movie.
Scariest movie of all time, Handsome, you start.
I think in the moment, it may not be the scariest movie, but my reaction, the most scared was Pet Sematary. I was at home, I was probably 10 years old. I watched it by myself, same kind of stories you guys were just telling. And I had to switch it off because I was too scared. And then, you know, I was still at the age where I had stuffed animals in my room. And I remember waking up in the night and there was stuffed whatever. And it was right there and it was in the moonlight. And I was like, oh, my goodness, the Pet Cemetery has come to my room. And that was almost the end of my horror movie. I've watched very few horror movies since then.
There, you know, obviously, if you add an Englishman to any picture, it adds gravitas, the British accent
to our American
ears. Yeah, true. It feels weightier when delivered by Ben Kingsley or otherwise. Is the opposite true for English people, or is it like those Americans? Untamed. Like, could you watch like Friday the 13th and feel like we can never go there because if we find ourselves on the outskirts of their concrete jungles, we'll be murdered right quick.
Yes, I mean, I think partly, but look, I mean, Jack the Ripper, the same thing, right. the kind of the foggy streets of London. Mm. I'm sure you guys have watched movies like that that then make you think the same thing in return. So, you know, we have more. In the UK, more kind of like straight up killers. We're just gonna kill you. You've got some kind of weirdos, like weird creatures in your horror movies that, you know, might pop out from around the corner. That's more like, oh look, it's a tiny doll that has a knife that's going to stab you, or you know, it's a man with very sharp fingernails.
Oh, my friends and I snuck beers in, some cans of Iron City, into the Monroeville Mall. Movie theater to watch Child's Play, and the giddiness of sneaking beers in plus, you know, getting to almost the bottom of one beer. And then when that head turns around on that doll, it's like, I'm going to kill you, you rah, rah. I mean, the hysterical laughter.
Your friend.
That has to be one of the top 10 laughs I've ever had in my life. It was the first time that thing's head like, I'm going to kill you. Like, well,
it's a little while. I can just
lady, punch you it. Can't handle it.
Yeah.
Money, your
I always, yeah, I always, So I, you know, like I said, I was terrified regularly as a child, and I was just a glutton for punishment. But I think, and even to this day, you know, I think it still holds. But the white trash serial killers always freaked me out. And maybe that's because I grew up as white trash, so I felt like I was surrounded by them. But like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the scene where the white trash kids are getting the white trash old man to try to lift his hand with the hammer to bash the kid in the head, like, oh, you can do it, old man. Here, just try to hit her a little bit harder. And she's, you know, just terrified when he throws the chick on the meat hook. You don't see that coming. And then, like, even in my adult years, watching, like, The Devil's Rejects, it just always did not sit well with me. Like, oh, yeah, these people exist. They live in these crappy trailer park communities. And God forbid you have to take a leak and you pull off the freeway. If you're driving across the country, they are going to crawl out from the woods, you, kill you, and you'll never be heard from again. And those were always the ones that sat with me, that stuck with me the longest. The Hills Have Eyes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the monster ones didn't spook me as much for exactly. Yeah, Freddy Krueger didn't, you know, plague me as much as like, that's just a person out there doing that. Like Halloween, the first Halloween, when he shows up in the frame of the door as a silhouette and he's got the thing over his head. And is it the girl? The girl's like, oh, come back to bed. And you're like, oh, you don't know what you're doing, lady. He's gonna knife you. I feel like the one that people go to a lot, but the experience for me with When a Stranger Calls is somebody told me the story first, and that spooked me something awful. Like the calls coming from inside the house is so terrifying. But then again, like you say, I would turn the TV. I would get so scared watching by myself. I would turn it off. And I remember once I turned off one of those early 80s, like Phantasm kind of horror movies. And I turned it off and it landed on a commercial from back in the day where the lady had asthma. And she's, but this was not up the context of it. I just landed on a woman holding a match at arm's length and trying to blow it out with her wheezy kind of breath. And she's like, I just remember like, she's like, ooh! And I was like, oh, the TV is, this is extended beyond the movie. And now this entire TV, nay, perhaps the house is plagued by horrific visions. Then I like settled down. I was like, I can't win tonight. The lady spooked me, but good trying to blow out that candle. I mean, that match. Eddie Spaghetti.
Eddie's never
considerably younger than us. I would be interested to hear nothing spooked me. You kidding? Life is spooky.
It's quite the opposite. Everything spooks me. So I don't think I've sat through one full entire horror movie, like any famous one besides The Shining, which I don't really count much.
Yeah.
I'm still haunted by Alan Houston's contract.
Yeah.
Sorry, that took me too long.
Scream and the Freddy, Jason, Halloween, zombie movies. Like, none. I can't do any of that. I don't like the negativity. I don't need that in my life. To me, there's no point with them. I can't sit there. And I'm okay with blood and gore. I could sit through the grossest scenes of a Tarantino movie. I don't bat an eye. But movies like that, where it's just the whole point is like to escape a killer or something, I can't do it. And weirdly, I love reading about stuff like what Money was talking about, like real life serial killers. Like I could last night, for whatever reason, I was reading about the Black Dahlia murders and why it hasn't been solved. Like, I can't explain to you why I was doing it, but I just was. I love
true crime action.
Yeah, I'm super intrigued by that. Like Jack the Ripper, whatever, that kind of stuff. But the fake, overly gross movies with the monsters or whatever.
I'm not looking for, when I'm watching a movie, my goal is to sit and relax rather than have my heart beating faster than it should be. And, you know, potentially hiding behind a pillow or two. That's not my TV viewing goal.
There is something though about like the, I don't know. I like them, but I think there is something about the cleverness of some of them. Like there's a movie that's pretty recent. It's called A Cabin in the Woods, and it's great. And it's stressful and you're on the edge of your seat, but it's very clever the way it was done. And I think you come to appreciate things like this. You know, Not Us, Get Out was great. That's a perfect example of like a stressful thriller, but it's very clever the way it's done. And I think I can appreciate those.
Yeah, creepy. But right. The idea of being scared, of being of being terrified in the I don't get. I guess what so we're the Iron Four here or four scaredy cats is the
coward.
Other name.
Coward,
no. I have no interest. But for real, I really like what goes on in your head. Is your life that rosy that you can afford to spook yourself in your moments right. of entertainment? Like, well, I have enough terrors going on in my brain that I don't need some outside influence adding to them. It seems very strange to me.
How we want to emote, right? I mean, movies are supposed to conjure emotions, and whether and I think there's a group there's a contingency that says I don't like sad movies. I don't need to cry and see a sad tale, whereas other people eat them up. I just think it's one of those emotions that you're looking for, like I'd rather be scared at something on the big screen than something in real life. So maybe I get my scares here, and that I guess serves that emotional vacancy that I otherwise wouldn't have.
That assumes life, the actual life, isn't going to present any right. scares. Right. I'm reserving them all for the movies.
Oh, that's it.
Thank goodness.
That's where I'm going to get them.
It really is bad news, kids out there. Eddie Spaghetti, I guess you can be counted among them. I've noticed even within I'm not talking about 11-year-old Dave. To now, I'm talking about like early adulthood, Dave. To now, one, I love roller coasters, but the older I get, the less I like the heights. The less right. I can. I just
that's
hate also, that vertigo feeling of like looking over the edge as it ticks up. Ooh, good tip probably, here. Hey, I want to tell you, parents, this go. On whatever your favorite amusement park is, they all have POV shots of the roller coasters now. Mm-hmm. And if you want Disneyland, if you have little ones and they want to ride It's a Small World, you can just go on, search Disneyland rides, and you get those POV rides. And it's super fun to do with your kids as a side note. But yes, even then, I can't even go to like what's the one on top? Universal, all the rides are those projection POV well,
those are
kind
different.
Of thing.
Those screw you up.
Like, I get nauseated from those.
Yeah, those will screw you up.
And I can't watch and scary movies now. My appetite for those has gone down even further than where it was. Like, I get so spooked.
That is too bad. I think there are very few things that are special moments for parents, like riding a roller coaster and looking at the kid next to you. My middle Parker is the one that I probably tortured the most. We went on Ghost Rider is my absolute favorite roller coaster. It's at Knott's. It's one of the old school wooden roller coasters that goes, you know, it's just straight up and then you haul ass down and you're going super fast through that circle. I think she was maybe five when I took her on it. And there's adults that like you see jumping out of line because they're too scared by the time. And there is something cool about that moment when they're looking at you like, hey, are you going to protect me here? Because it's going up and like,
there's no way out.
No way out. And then by the end of it, they're just laughing and giggling. Well, let's do it together. There is something special about that.
We did that. We went to Legoland, which is obviously not known for its amazing rides. But I went with my daughter. And at the end of the day, it was like the park closes at 6 or whatever. And they said, right, last ride, we're going on. And it was the littlest roller coaster. It was the kind of the easiest one. But it was still had a couple of jumps.
The dragon. For
them. So we got back to the, you know, do the whole thing. It's great. And the guy's like, who wants to go again? And so all the kids on the roller coaster are like, yay, let's go. So then it goes around again. We get back again. And this time around, all the kids are like, one more time. So he's like, all right, up you go. Yeah. And it goes, and I'm not joking, 17 times later, we've gone around, and the kids are like, again. And the guy's like, and I'm like, please, will you let me off this roller coaster? I cannot, even though it is like the slowest, easiest roller coaster in the world, I can't do this another time. And it's more, as much as anything else, it's my body is being like shook around and everything. I've dislocated my back at this point. I had to crawl off the roller coaster. I was like, kids, you go, you know, have another 20 go.
I need a funnel cake. I can't do this anymore.
Funnel cake.
You've had our funnel cakes, right, Hanson?
I've tried a funnel cake. I don't know why. Why would you make a funnel cake? What's the point of a funnel cake?
It's like a
what's
beignet, wrong? But a different shape. It's delicious. What's your problem
what's the point?
With a funnel cake? What do you mean?
Fried dough and sugar, man. Fried dough and sugar.
What's the point? Cut them off, Hanson. Keep them. But that's a warning. Right. I don't like
it. Okay.
One thing I won't stand for is you disparaging our delicious funnel cakes. Yeah, I'm with you, Money. You're so right about the experience. It got sideways, though. There was no happy ending for it. We went on the Incredicoaster 2 years ago, and it was the first big roller coaster.
Love that.
The older kids went on. It's a great, it's a legit.
Oh, yeah.
Great
coaster. It's got a loopy loop. It's got a good drop.
Yeah. It's got some, what I don't like is, like, I don't like Space Mountain because I don't like being in darkness because then you drop out without seeing it. That feels like a cheat to me. I like seeing the big, down the hill we go. But the kids, because of the way the seats laid out, I have to be in front, and the two, the then 11-year-old, 9-year-old were behind me. And as soon as you hear Dash Incredible's voice, hey, is everybody ready? Okay, here we go. And they were excited. And then his count on it is a little too fast. Dash Incredible, he's like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And it takes off. As soon as it took off, I knew that they were petrified beyond. and as a terrible parent, as we went, I thought to myself, there's nothing, you're locked in, you cannot even turn around to see how they're doing. May as well just enjoy the next 2 minutes. Like, what are you gonna do? I can't stop the ride. I can't do anything. I can't empathize. I could try to empathize, but you know, when's the next time I'm getting on this coaster? I enjoyed it. And as soon as we stopped, I turned around and they both were sobbing. They were both terrified. Is that right? But now they love coasters. Now they both love coasters, owed in part to our trip to Kennywood Park in Pittsburgh, PA. Used to be the best place for roller coasters anywhere and still has some really great ones. And the other side of
That's a shot at Ohio.
Well, Cedar Point we can talk about. But
Cedar Point, Kings Island.
So, I'm not saying now. Cedar Point is number
one. I want to make sure I acknowledge our Ohio friends listening to the podcast. You're not going to get away with that, Western PA, okay? You're not going to slide that in there and get away with it.
You start really living. One of the first times you really feel like a big grown-up or some sort of sense of what it is when you are able, really think about that, come to think of it. Watching horror movies is maybe one, but when you get to ride you're tall enough and brave enough to get on the big coaster, the biggest coaster in the park, scary. Some people don't, too much for some people. I'll do it is a great rite of
great victory.
Yes, for I was going to say manhood, but my sister did it with me. So whatever that made her, a woman.
I just quickly want to add, I also harass my children on the roller coasters. Like I am the arms up the whole time. Like you cannot put it down no matter what. And they'll be sitting next to me and I'll be like, get your arms, put them up now. As we're going through the whole thing.
One of my kids loves it. The other one is humiliated by it. I really get a weird, like Joaquin Phoenix in The Joker. If you put me on a really big hill roller coaster, I cannot stop laughing. I mean, it's not like something I wouldn't be able to sustain a fake laugh. It makes me gleeful. The other side of the thing is, so the kids, but then Mo Damashek, what makes old Momo such a gem with her grandkids and otherwise is, and I put the pictures on social media and stuff, is I have images of her. She went on the crazy roller coaster in Pittsburgh, in Kennywood. I mean, like, really crazy. Like, the old man is like, oh, you can hurt your neck, and that's how old people are supposed to be on these things. Her in line in what felt like 298-degree humidity with us just standing in line. So it's this old bat, Mo Damashek, standing there. And then her laughing on another ride at Disneyland with Jean-Claude Van Damashek, quintessential Mo. Roller coasters, they're great. We all agree. We did it, everybody. What a show.
Finally.
I'm so inspired by this. Once all this BS is over, can we all go on a roller coaster together? The Cowardly Four. Four ride a roller coaster.
We're going in knots.
We've done
I'll do that.
A plane cast, I think. We did a plane cast. We've definitely aspired to do a boat cast. We at one point discussed having a vasector cast. Mm-hmm. Could we potentially do a coaster cast?
I mean, yeah. Now we've spent the last 8 weeks plus in each other's bedrooms. We certainly can ride a roller coaster together.
Exactly. We've got personal.
The last time I was at Knott's, and I believe it to be the finest in all the land. It has some old rickety roller coasters. It's Montezuma's Revenge is what it's called here, but it's like the Incredicoaster where it just launches you from a start, and it's just one loop up, one loop back, and that's it. So they have the old ones like that, and then they have the newer fangled stand up where your legs are hanging, and then they have the classic. they have a brand new one where it's like you're in like a car, right? It's four rows of four seats each, and you go straight up and then you hang and then it flips you over and you are staring straight down, before it releases you and you just drop straight kind of. So we,
and
so
it twists as well.
And it twists
on the way down. Kind of, yeah, yeah.
So the, it was the last coaster I've been on before this happened. And we go quite a bit here in the old Smith family. There was a mom and her son right in front of me. And you know, you load up and then it pushes you forward like 10 feet and you got to wait for the car in front of you to clear. And then you start going up. So as it has pushed us up 10 feet, her son is not crying so much as he is convulsing and sobbing. And he is like, I don't want to do it. I can't do it, Mom. He's probably 12, 13. And she's like, it's okay, honey. Excuse me, sir. Can we get off? And he's like, nothing I can do. And he's like, and he's just sitting there and everyone in line is staring at him and he's crying uncontrollably. And he's like, I'm sorry, you're beyond the dock. We can't back it up, but you're gonna have, but Mom, I don't wanna go. And as we move from our standing position to start our ascent, he's crying and it's terrible. I'm laughing, right? All of a sudden I just hear him as we start moving, go, oh no.
I love it.
And I didn't even remember the ride because I was laughing so hard uncontrollably that I could not. I was, and my daughter's laughing and I'm like, don't laugh, it's not. I'm just like, oh no.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know, outside of without working blue and carnal pleasures or whatever, I don't know that there's a greater joyous experience for the human being than a roller coaster, now that I think about it.
Pretty great.
Good day, the smells of the amusement park and that, what is that thing, a calliope? Is that what that thing's called? That like,
what, a calliope.
Is that what I'm thinking of? That's that noise that's ubiquitous wherever you are in amusement park.
From the merry-go-round.
Sort of like a casino, you hear the ching, 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 ding, 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 like the constantly, the amusement park equivalent. Yeah. Yeah. But Cedar Point, my college girlfriend was a lifeguard at the water park thing. So when the water park would close at night, I mean, when the park would close at night, employees had free run of the joint and we would ride what remains one of the best roller coasters in the world, the Magnum. We would ride that, like you're describing, Hanson. We'd ride that three times in a row in a given night. It was a wonderful place. Cedar Point is one of the great roller coaster places. I haven't been around too many in Southern California, but Spaghetti, to shift over back to what I wanted to ask you, what's worse in somebody who's still in his 20s opinion? Is it worse? Cause this is a existential, you know, lesser of two evils kind of thing for people, for our age. Is better to be cool and go flat brim and or whatever the style of the day is? At what point is appropriate to cut off? Like, who do you have less respect for? I guess you're not going to have a ton of respect for either one. Do you respect, I guess you can really, you know, look at it like this. Who do you respect less in terms of fashion? Dave Damashek, who's like, it's over. It ended 15, 25 years ago. The way Dave looks, this is it. Like, Dave can't keep up with the latest fashions, you know, like that's it. Or Matt Money Smith, who despite his ever advancing age, continues to be hip and now. Like, he's, you know, he's super hip and now.
Yeah, but money pulls it off. Money pulls it off, Dave. I don't think that's the right example. Money actually is able to pull it off.
All right, who doesn't then? Who does it and doesn't pull it off?
I mean, this is not even a
names. Go ahead.
This is
not, do that. Like, do I seem like I try to stay hip? Is that? I don't feel like
I don't. I was gonna say I don't get that vibe from money. I don't think money's a good example. It's not an offense to money either. You guys are just wearing like hats and a t-shirt and.
Well, all I was saying is money's definitely cooler than Dave.
Well, I mean, that's not, nobody's debating that part, but
if you're a guy at, you know, whatever age, if you're past 40 and you're into fashion and you're into like what's cool and style, like that to me, I don't have tolerance for that. I coming from a kid, a guy who's wearing a jersey of a younger man and gym shorts and slides around his house constantly, like, I don't know fashion, but I just, you know, I don't know, to me, just t-shirt, jeans.
I like to think of it. If rips and zips are the two things, right? People who are trying to be cool, who are of an older generation, they like rips in their clothes. You look absolutely ridiculous if you're wearing clothes age 40, and zips. That seems to be the other thing that seems to come with rips. A multitude of zips, especially. I think maybe this is like a British thing, but like wearing a jacket, which you obviously don't have to do that often in Southern California, that has an enormous number of zips that are not required. And yes, there's a look, there's a certain look of rips and zips that's like you're too old for this. And even if you weren't too old for it, it's kind of, you look stupid anyway.
I'm not trying to be hip. If I tried to go flat, Bill, this is how I would roll into the Damage Check podcast. And you would be able to appropriately say, right, you dork, stop. Or wearing it backwards.
I don't go out of the house. I don't go out in public with the backwards hat, but I will sport the backwards lid around the house. And I don't think that's running afoul of anything. But it would be bad. I can't go out spaghetti looking like this with a hat, backwards hat, though, to the drugstore.
I don't have a problem with that. I'm very pro do what you want to do. And as long as you're happy with it, then go ahead and do it.
Oh, no, like, God, you're the worst kind of person, Eddie. Judge others.
No, if I saw Dave walking around with the Feenster's Union shirt and a backwards Pirates hat, I'm like, that guy is probably awesome. If I see a guy now who's during this pandemic going to CVS and like some high fashion that you would see on like, you know,
Melrose, he's wearing bejeweled jeans and an Affliction shirt, you're going to judge him. You're not going to say, and you know what? Good for that guy. If that's what he's into, then good for him. No, you're going to say, hey, that freaking guy has got diamonds on the pockets of his jeans. Really, so don't give me the, I don't judge anybody.
I meant more judging, like you want to throw the hat backwards.
Yeah, I got you. It's funny because I would judge, as we're having this conversation, if I saw spaghetti, I likely would judge him walking around in a Utah Jazz game jersey and that head of hair. I want you to ask the much more stylish and hip and attractive and otherwise plugged into what's going down. Ask your girlfriend, Jada, what's the worst old guy move? To be hip and now? Or to just be like,
no question.
Yeah, it looks like he hasn't updated his wardrobe since 1994.
She would hate the old wardrobe. She thinks people who dress more hip and like into fashion style are better. She tries to like buy me stuff and dress me up, and I'm like, all right, that's gonna sit in the closet for years, and I'm never gonna take the tags off. So I hope you're happy with that. Like, that's,
Eddie, would you mind just turn your camera off and then go away for as long as it takes and come back wearing some of the items that she's bought for you that you have put in the closet? Could you just go do that right now?
Good. Sure, I can get it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Awesome.
We'll just talk.
I don't want to watch you get changed. So please, if that's involved.
Donovan Mitchell is here. I am with
my Spider Mitchell alternate that mimics the rock of the Utah mountains is going to come off. God, I love Eddie.
I like the guys who basketball, I don't know, like what would be, I guess you could get like a Stanley Roberts or something like that.
No, there's nothing.
Hot Plate Williams or somebody, something like that. There aren't that many examples of heavy set basketball guys, but I do love the guy who makes the choice to get the offensive lineman number, like that. The guy who's walking around in the stands with number 73. Love John Hanna. Who that mook is? I don't have great regard for that guy. Who else I don't have great regard for is, I feel like we know that at the dawn of the 21st century, at least, and we know who the names are, these guys who have made millions upon millions of dollars by just hot taking it, whether they believe it or not, that's besides the point. This is going to get attention. It's such an easy formula to apply if you're willing to do it, if you're willing to be soulless. And there are three or five people who, like I say, are multimillionaires as a result of that, as people hang on their word because they get great credit for allegedly making you think, I haven't considered that side of it. Just take the minority opinion of everything and defend it tooth and nail, and you can be a millionaire too. Doesn't matter if you don't believe what you're saying,
right?
And never mind that your bogus opinions will fold in on each other eventually. That you don't contradict yourself,
right?
Yeah, they don't care about that. It's not about being right. It's about being interesting. How about both? But anyhow, those guys must feel like Pearl Jam feels or Nirvana feels when they look at Creed. Like the second iteration and the third, it gets worse and worse. These people now, in this spring of 2020, it occurs to me, I remember 5 years ago, hot takes were all the thing. Like, oh, making fun of hot takes, misspelling and everything else. It seems to me it's gotten even worse. Is that possible? This stuff about like Roethlisberger's a bum, you know, it's not hitting home for me because it's the Steelers. It's just like, it is a good example of like, you have no way of knowing what the circumstance is with him. And yet, you know, for sure what's going to be, it seems more ridiculous than ever.
Well, they have nothing else.
It seems
right now.
It seems not compelling at all. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Roller coasters, then.
Exactly.
Good. I mean, that's more interesting to me.
What happens? You know, it's what happens, and I think that's it's very hard to be a hot taker when there's nothing out there to hot take. You know, you just have to attach it to something else and embrace debate. And you take one side. Oh no, I think Ben's going to be great. You take that side. I'll take the Ben's washed up, fat, and worthless, and let's go for 5 minutes, and people will watch. And you got to pick a side. You can't say, because no, that's the thing about sports fans is nobody's going to be.
Fashion update. Hold that pop money,
Eddie. Whoa.
Yeah.
I put on two shirts.
Your collar popped.
I was stretching to put it on with the buttons and it almost snapped, so I had to readjust. So the maroon shirt.
Does she want you to be fat, more fashionable, but she doesn't want you to be as fat as you are.
That's problem number one is the weight.
She buys spaghetti clothes
extra small.
She wants
intentionally.
To describe the stuff that I'm wearing for the listeners. The first, it's a t-shirt. It's a maroon t-shirt, but it's a medium. It's a men's medium size that I.
You are not a medium man, Eddie.
No, a size that I've not been for a number of years. And then the outer shirt is a blue kind of. It looks denim, but it's not. It's like a Calvin Klein. Almost shiny looking button down with buttons on the sleeves too, and it's like a shirt meant for like a guy to wear to a club like One Oak that I don't
the club
attend.
Shirt.
Yeah, so these are two examples of it. Most of her pants, like the waist, like that's not gonna fit. So like those are up in the closet too. So it's the wardrobe is that's why I mainly wear jerseys and tank tops now.
Society has bigger issues, but I submit here and now that Casual Friday has negatively impacted the way adult fellas go through life, because at some point the man decided with a petty little gift like, oh, we don't have to wear a tie and coat on Fridays. Oh, we're living. This is it. Thank you, boss. As though that's the lamest thing ever. Even worse is when they say, let's have fun. Wear your favorite team jersey to work today or dress up for St. Patrick. Like what? Grown-ups rejoicing about these opportunities. But what has happened, as always does, when the man...
Hold on. I got to follow up, Dave. So you, because I have this at the radio station. This exists because radio station, you know, the executives, the salespeople... they all used to show up to work in shirt and tie, a lot of them full suit kind of thing, especially the head of sales or the program director, all, you know, and then gradually it became, you know what? I don't need to wear the tie. I'm just going to wear a coat and a shirt. And then it became, you know what? I can just come in a nice shirt and a really nice pair of jeans. And now basically I'm not saying they're slovenly, but for the most part, they'll wear polos. They'll wear jeans. You know, they're always wearing jeans, maybe a nice pair of, Lululemon pants or something like that. That's basically the outfit. So what's worse, the fact that that is now what is appropriate or accepted attire in the workplace, or the guy that's still holding on to the suit? You know what? I believe in looking professional. I believe that, you know, I present myself in a professional way to my clients and to my coworkers, and it is important for me to look my best every day. So I'm going to keep wearing the suit, even though you're one of maybe 5% of the people that are still wearing a
dress,
suit.
Dress what for I'm the talking job about. You want, money.
Right, exactly.
It's where we started. It's the lesser of two evils, and I'm not sure which it is. That's the I don't know. Neither one is a good look. That like. Corporate approved casual that now has insinuated itself into date night. Go out into Southern California restaurants the next time we're allowed to, and 90% of the fellas there will be dressed like Eddie Spaghetti is
now. They're in club shirts. They're in the shirt that has a pattern, and then the liner of the button on the inside is a different pattern.
It's a different
underneath the cuffs is a different pattern. And it's like, aren't I super hip? Check out this shirt.
Yeah.
I happen to love Eddie. I've done it both ways. I love the old ball games. When you see the old getaway games, you know, played in Brooklyn or wherever, and you see the black and white stills of it, and all the businessmen are in shirt sleeves, almost as though they're in the same cult or something, because the black and white doesn't indicate that they're wearing light blue with their tie. It looks like they all have white shirts with black ties, all watching a ball game, and they have a lot of them have their hats on. I pine for that, and I sign off on that. And I never understood when I was a suit myself in the 90s in Chicago, people would always be like, you know, other guys in their 20s be like, I can't stand this tie. I can't wait to loosen this tie. Like, are you tying that correctly? If it's choking you, I don't think you're doing it. It's that cumbersome for you. Conversely, Chandler Bing was in a show that was about making a late night or making a SNL type show. Do you remember that show about a decade ago that was on NBC? On the Sunset
It was a spinoff of Friends, and it was
no. It was like it was an hour long show with the guy Chandler Bing. I can't think of his name.
Matthew Perry.
Okay. And he was the head writer of the show, and he reprimanded. He's like, no more looking like outgrown kids in this at this writer's table. We dress professionally, and he made them wear suit and ties. And that was obnoxious too. It leaves me, but then again, the guy who, when people like when Kimmel was in the early days of the Kimmel show, he was insistent, I want to break some rules. I'm not wearing a tie out there like you're supposed to. And it's like, yeah, but the effect is, I get what you're going for, but the effect is ultimately that you kind of look like you've spent the night in the pokey and now you're meeting the judge in the courtroom the next day. When you wear the suit and the shirt underneath, but no tie, that's that effect. But you look like you have a public defender, you know, for whatever felony you committed last night, you know, kind of look.
Dave, I thought where you were going though, when you were talking about the Friday, the dress down Friday thing, is that the man has also said dress down, but not that much.
No, right.
Not what you would want to be wearing, like dress down to an appropriate level that actually still isn't you, right? If you don't consider what you wear to work on Monday through Thursday to be reflective of you, you can wear what you want on Friday, but actually it's not what you want to wear. It's still at a level that like Eddie's certainly not going to be comfortable at, because what Eddie actually wants to wear, although I've seen Eddie wearing this at work, is his jersey.
Corporate approved fun. I mean, that's why Office Space is a gem of a picture, because you know, as they say, it's true. I mean, all those beats are exactly right. I worked in corporate America in the cubicle doing sales and everything else. And the line that resonated the most for me was at the end of it. Well, now I can't even remember what the line was exactly, but it's essentially like you basically at the end of the week, you've done basically about 11 minutes of work. That's the big ruse, the big bait and switch, even on this side of things, that we get to flap our gums and crack wise and all that kind of stuff about sports and roller coasters and movies and music and otherwise. That is more work, ironically, than sitting in the cubicle. You can just get away with just shuffling papers. Like, just move the stack of papers from one side of your cube to the other, and no one really is going to know for years on end that, hey, you know, Dave in the corner cube over there, like, he doesn't do, as far as we can tell, hasn't done anything in about 6 years now. You know, that's what you can do.
Okay. I saw him at the meetings. I noticed he sent back some emails. I don't know. It seems like he's doing stuff to me.
I once got in trouble because it's endless. Corporate America is endless meetings. It's just like constantly like getting together. Like, what are we meeting on every day? Do we ever do anything? We just meet.
Validating why you're paying me. That's what the meeting is. I'm validating why I get paid here.
It's crazy. And we did they're always team building, exercises. Why do we have the team? To what end? And once there was a thing where everybody all the salespeople were given a thing and you had to write 10 things underneath it. It was like, I am dot, dot, dot. And then 10 things about you so that, you know, presumably we'd all get to know each other even better. And I went like, well, I'm Dave and I am a little teapot, short and stout. Oh, did I get in trouble for that one?
I can imagine.
That didn't go up. Well, it went over in the room, but then after the fact, as it turned out, it didn't go.
Yeah, there's a reason we do this, like, Dave.
It's like, did you hear the laughs, though? Did you hear the laughs? What are you talking about? They're like, I don't know what game you're playing here, but you're not playing our game, Dave. So anyway.
I would like to quickly to button the conversation about corporate America. As someone who worked for the Lakers and went to every home game for 6 straight years, one of my favorite observations was the high percentage of guy who gets off work and for whatever reason thinks it's a good idea to throw the jersey over his white right work shirt. And he's there with his Kobe tank top, with the shirt underneath, the sleeves are rolled up, he's got the collar on top of the tank top, and it's like, you don't need to wear the Kobe jersey. Just being at the Laker game is good enough. If you stand up and you cheer when he makes a basket, they're gonna know you're rooting for the Lakers. But you know, you're talking about a few hundred, now that might be an exaggeration, at least 100 of them I would see.
Yeah.
Every single game, at least 100 guys in work shirts with a tank top over it.
It's unforgivable.
I guess you're right. What you're getting at is authenticity, right? If you're coming from work, then you came from work and that's how you look and you got your suit and tie on and there's something to, my favorite thing. I remember the old man when he would come off the golf course and we'd go to a swimming pool right near where he would golf, and he would come over in his cleats, his golf shoes, which now have gone the way of the dodo bird. But I never had more respect for a man who saved lives and everything as a physician and everything. Never had more respect for him than when he'd get off the golf course and come over and I'd hear his clickety clack like he was a gunslinger just finishing somebody a ne'er-do-well at high noon. It would come over, click, click, click. That was the coolest. Authenticity, eh?
Sure. Exactly right. Sorry, Hank. I thought you were going. I thought Hank was going.
No, there's nothing. I mean, Dave's right. Of course.
All right. Do we want to squeeze in some? We didn't do any football talk here. Quickly, Cam Newton. Where's he playing? Go money. Oh, you know what? A legitimate question for you as a Chargers guy. We've been around this and around this and around this for 6 months at least now. Legitimately, when you saw Phil Rivers going downhill in that offense, do you buy the discussion we've had many times? Is if you can't rightly say that our team is put together and it is at optimal level to give us the chance to get to the Super Bowl, do you feel the Chargers, with Cam Newton floating around out there, I know his medicals are TBD, but if somebody checks him out, the Chargers physicians look at him and look him over and they say, wow, he's ready to go. He's better, looks better than we could have imagined. Isn't it incumbent on this ripe roster, a team that legitimately looks like, if there's anybody out there that could challenge the Chiefs in the conference, it's the Chargers, but not with Tyrod Taylor and not with a young Justin Herbert, unless he's so electric on the level of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes that he can elevate the team, which, again, that's a little bit of a reach for a rookie to do. Isn't it incumbent upon them to say, all right, let's get Cam in here? Because and especially if it's like a one-year deal, like I got to do a prove-it thing because the league's turning its nose up at me. Shouldn't they go get Cam? Because they can get to the Super Bowl with Cam, and they can't with Tyrod Taylor. Is that a fair statement?
I think they would if they thought that. I think Cam, but I think people don't realize Cam's very polarizing. You know, you really have to, and I think that's one of the great things about the Ravens and what they did when they decided to draft Lamar Jackson is they said, we are going to completely design this offense around this guy's specific talents. And it's been great. And I think you have to do a little bit of that with Cam. His style of play is different, obviously, than what Phillip was. Now, it's very similar to what Tyrod is. And I think, the issue that you would have is just circumstance and the fact that we're going through this. And A, you can't get your hands on him medically. And B, he can't be around you to learn the offense. You know, there's no OTAs, there's no mini camps, there's no, you know, and I think that's probably why Tyrod's kind of their idea of, well, look, we might even have a bit of an advantage here, you know, in that he's been in this offense. It's the same coordinator, the same players. So all we need him to do is not turn the ball over, you know, 27 times between fumbles and interceptions in games that were one score. And we feel like we're going to get into that postseason. So my guess is that's what they're thinking is. And I also think just as, and we've had this debate many times, I just think as a passer with, you know, with what you need to do with that offense, what's available to you, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Austin Ekeler out of the backfield, I think they look at it as, you know, you need a guy who's able to distribute a little bit more. And I don't know if Cam, you know, and that's obviously always the kind of one versus the other is, did he have enough talent at the wide receiver and tight end position, or was Cam just not great at putting that ball all over the place? So I don't know. I mean, I totally understand your point. Would you feel better about Cam taking snaps than Tyrod Taylor if he was healthy and he's MVP level Cam? Of course.
I think Tyrod Taylor has been perennially kind of underrated. When they handed him the keys with the Browns, he had Mayfield looming, and I suspect that probably gets in just about anybody's head.
But yeah, horrible offensive line.
Yeah, but just straight up within the division, if you cannot rightly say, well, yeah, we can compete with that team. I don't know. I just don't know that ultimately. But we've also talked about how good the defense has a chance to be. But anyway,
I think what they're going to do, and what you're starting to read a lot of articles on and hear a lot of people talk about, is just the return of outside and wide zone and how dominant it has been the last couple of years with Sean McVay, with Kyle Shanahan. And I think you're going to see a lot of that with the Chargers this year. And that's why they went out and got Trey Turner and why they got Bulaga. And I know it's going to sound crazy, but you know, if they're thinking of Sam Tevi at left tackle, he is super athletic, not a great pass blocker, but he was fantastic in run blocking and his ability to get out there and really get his hands on guys. So I think you're just going to see a lot of that, very similar to the 49ers, where if you believe Tyrod can play at a level Jimmy Garoppolo can, and I certainly believe that, then I think that's kind of how they look at this offense and what they think they can do with that running back room and the talent that they have.
It seems like the Chiefs are so far and away the favorite. I know a lot of people are hip on the Ravens. We have to wait and see what year two fully of that offense is going to look like. But I'm with you completely that the key to what they did was they didn't just say, yeah, Lamar's our QB now. They said, now we must build the entire offense to suit this attack that we're going to do. It's interesting, I guess, run away from Chris Jones and company, because what they do have going there is that plug in the middle there. And I guess if you start moving around those guys. Anyway, it's a curious one. And the other one I have for you is Handsome. The Ravens should, I don't think I'm going to try to hot take you that the Steelers are going to win the division, but I think the Browns are going to be good. Who's the second best team in the AFC North, Handsome Hank?
The Steelers.
You think the Steelers?
I think the Steelers are, but I think it is. I'm certainly not going to do the hot take on Ben Roethlisberger's trash, but I do think that to me, if you're looking at a landing spot for Cam, that's the right place, because Ben obviously has been injured.
How would that be, though, unless he gets hurt? Unless Roethlisberger gets hurt, there's just no way would ever happen.
But it's more likely, based on the recent evidence, it's more likely that he will get hurt than he won't. And they saw last year, they were a playoff team that ultimately failed because they didn't have an adequate backup. They haven't really addressed that to the extent that they need to. And look, this might be Ben's last season, so why wouldn't you plan for the future and bring in a guy that potentially is either your future starting quarterback when Ben does retire, or can be the bridge to the guy that you draft?
Because the answer to that is that it ignores, I'm not being snarky to you, but people keep saying that, it ignores the reality of how contracts work and how the operation goes. If Cam Newton comes in, all right, I'll sign under the premise that I am Ben's backup in case he gets hurt this year. Like, what's the 1 year deal? Well, it doesn't guarantee him anything. If Roethlisberger ends 2020 I'm retired now. Like, what does that? That doesn't mean anything for Cam's. Like, okay, now resign me then, Steelers. And it would be the same thing as. And again, he's atrophying on the sideline, assuming he doesn't play. The best move for Cam is, at this point, I think what money's getting at is, or maybe you too, Handsome, is wait and see. Somebody's inevitably going to get hurt.
Going to get hurt.
Go in there and take over.
In the current situation, if they don't, what you're looking for is, I guess, you know, potentially what Jameis Winston was doing was, where is a place where I can go and A, have a chance of starting based on injury? Obviously, you're not rooting for anyone to get injured, but also B, where's a place that I can establish myself and potentially have the opportunity to sort of slide into a spot with it? What else is a pretty good team around you?
I know the team has impacted the way teams can look at guys or not. They don't have a chance to do the medicals on Cam and all that. But it seems crazy to me that the Jacksonville Jaguars, who allegedly want to win as many football games as possible this season,
no, they don't.
Have decided. No, they don't. But I'm sad. But
they want Trevor Lawrence.
If that's what you're selling. Gardner Minshew over Cam Newton is a ridiculous idea. And by the way, if two is your guy long term, fine. Talk about a 1 year deal, a transition guy. This Ryan Fitzpatrick jazz, I guess that makes better. I'm sorry, now yeah. I just got in my own way. That does make better sense. You don't want Cam looming.
No, Cam looming is not good for a rookie.
The fight over who gets Cam, number one. You know that would be that.
I would like to pose the question to you, Dave. Who is the second best team in the AFC North?
I mean, I'm in the same place I was going into last year, which was that the Browns roster, offensive line a year ago aside, was just looked loaded. Like it was like good luck making a case. My case against the Browns a year ago was Freddie Kitchens, and I was proven correct on that one. Right. Obviously, like this guy's definitely going to do it. The guy who's never done it before, he's definitely the guy who has the keys to unlock all the Browns fans' woes of the last four decades. That's fixed. The offensive line is fixed. And
you'd rather have their receivers. You'd rather have their running backs. You'd probably rather have their offensive line with Stanley and Wills and Betonio and Shredder now. I mean, it's –
And their defense has minimum a bunch of playmakers, if nothing else, that'll turn you over.
Miles Garrett, like that's it is – if it doesn't happen this year, I don't know what to say. Like to me, it is set up where it should happen.
It should be – we talked about that the other day, and then we'll cut this off. We've gone on more than enough. But as we rank the divisions, or like I think the good gauge of that is, aside from the division where your rooting interest lies, what division would you most want to watch? We're going to make a pretty strong case for the AFC North to see year two of the MVP, Lamar Jackson, and what that Ravens team can do. Fun to look at them. The Browns with Baker Mayfield, fascinating at minimum and potentially – a breakout team. This has got to be it, though, for Baker, because you can point to Peyton Manning threw a bunch of picks in year two and, you know, got a little sideways in his sophomore year. Plenty of time for Baker to turn it around, but if he doesn't, that's fun to watch. And then you have the Hall of Famer in Roethlisberger and then Joe Burrow to see what goes on there. But I don't know, man. The underreported thing and the irony in what I'm about to say is Roethlisberger misses all of last year. James Conner hurt for a lot of it. Le'Veon Bell misses basically 2 years. Antonio Brown sideways. Stephon Tuitt. And then most significantly, Ryan Shazier. All those things are absences from the starting lineup and key absences. And yet I still feel like the Steelers have largely dodged the injury thing. And that's what could be their undoing. If Cam Hayward or TJ Watt, where there's just no legitimate depth there. I mean, if TJ Watt gets hurt, well, then that's the end of the season for the Steelers. You know, they're not going to, or if Minka gets hurt, they just don't have, that's free agent era football.
I mean, I think
their defense should be
over.
That defense
is better than the Browns defense.
Right. And this year, especially given that we may not have as much time, you know, for teams to practice during training camp and who knows about preseason and everything else, it feels like talent level on defense where, you know, you always say the offenses are sort of catching up could be the thing that differentiates teams, at least in the first half of the season, to have, you know, that is going to be even more of an advantage than it would be normally.
I mean, I know it's easy to say I really do. I know that you will laugh at this comment. I really do try. I don't consider myself a homer, even though you guys do. Because, yes, I have.
We definitely do.
I know you do. That's fine. May I finish?
Sure.
I mean, I just felt like it was important for us to acknowledge that. Yes, you're correct.
We yeah, because I said it before you said it, so you don't. It doesn't. It's not a victory for you when I've already said that it's.
You
true,
tried to take it away from us, and that's ours.
That's right.
Yeah, that's ours.
Nah. No. I'd like to see things happen, but that doesn't get in the way of what I think will happen.
I see.
However, I feel that if Roethlisberger is at all right, that should be. I don't
can
know.
Be objective. I can be objective, and I'm being objective. But
I am being objective. I don't know if he's ready to go. But if his but. If the but early if returns is, on him throwing it are
better.
If his arm, that's right. That's right. If his arm's all right, I'll take him over Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield, and Joe Burrow, and that's it. That's the end of it. I don't. I'm out. Say whatever you want. To you, I say fat. That's what I say. If Stefan's ready to go, what are we talking about? That should so be. Wait,
I just want to make sure, because you have pressed me on this player multiple times, trying to back me into a corner and get me into trouble. If you can have for the 2020 campaign, Lamar Jackson or Ben Roethlisberger, you want which player?
I mean, you're going to have to put the asterisk on it, though.
I don't want an asterisk. It's a simple question. You can either have the league's reigning MVP. League's reigning MVP, okay, or right, coming off a missed season, 37-year-old Ben Roethlisberger. Which one would you prefer?
Lamar Jackson might not have been the MVP if Ben had been able to play last year.
I meant to look at spaghetti. Congratulations, you got a big laugh. And from Eddie Spaghetti.
He's deflecting right now, guys. You see this? He's deflecting right now.
Eddie Spaghetti's on 4QB is standing out on the curb if you need him.
Daniel Jones, okay?
Daniel Jones will probably have a better season.
Come on,
than
answer the
arm,
question, Dave.
Big Ben.
Come
whoa,
on,
whoa,
Dave.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Answer
Eddie,
the question.
Eddie,
wait, no,
Eddie, don't move us off the point.
I
you have not answered the question.
I just want to honor Eddie Spaghetti's point to differentiate someone who wants to see things and someone who is deluded. Eddie Spaghetti just said Daniel Jones is going to have a better season than Ben Roethlisberger.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm poking the bear.
Now, Dave.
Come on, Dave. Answer the question.
The question. You get to choose. 2020 campaign. Ben or reigning MVP of the NFL, Lamar Jackson.
In the system that he's in. And
you just basically they say, hey, we'll swap.
However you like.
However you like, whatever, however you want to, basically you are just moving those two guys.
I mean, listen, if seven is ready, let's get to heaven. Here we go, Steelers. That's what I want. Let's do it.
For the record. I just want to make sure we have that for the record.
I don't want to belabor this. Everybody has things to do with their life, but your contention is that the guy who has had one stellar, marvelous season.
I'm just a guy asking a question. Okay. That's all I'm doing. I'm just asking you, would you rather have the guy that has set the league on fire?
Wait a second. Set the league on fire? One guy's been in three Super Bowls and won two of them. What are we talking about?
Right. I'm talking about
one's going to the Hall of Fame. One guy's definitely going to the Hall of Fame.
2020.
Exactly. You know who else is going to the Hall of Fame? Eli Manning.
Right.
Eli Manning's going to the Hall of Fame. He's won two Super Bowls. And I would rather have Lamar Jackson quarterback my team than Eli Manning.
All right.
That's why I asked the question. And Eli I bet Eddie Manning would agree that he would rather have Lamar Jackson quarterback his team than Eli Manning in 2020.
I mean, if you float that out without any context, if you just say Dave is an idiot because Dave likes rather. It is not crazy to say that I am suspicious of what will happen to Lamar Jackson.
How's it feel? This is something you put on us all the time.
Now I want you to admit.
Oh, you're still not a believer, huh? Now you think you can throw?
Now I want you to admit something, Money.
Sure.
That Michael Jordan is a jerk.
Oh, clearly he's a jerk. I appreciated watching the Bulls win a bunch of championships as a Chicago Bulls fan back in the day. Absolutely. But the scene of him laughing at Gary Payton, I think, was the biggest indictment of his jerkiness. It's like, hey, no, Derry roughed you up in that game.
That's
five.
Exactly right. So, that's the point.
So maybe right. just acknowledge that he did. And now at the same time, you know, when you talk, like we had Scotty Burrell on yesterday on the show, and he had said he felt like, he's like, I feel bad for Mike. He's like, you know, everybody's like asking me, oh, he was such a bully to you. He's like, that guy was the best teammate I ever had. He oh, invited really? Me to everything. He's like, he always invited me to everything. He always wanted to see how I was doing. He goes, that stuff that you saw, that's just, you know, grabbing ass. Two guys getting after one another, having some fun. He goes, I never took it as anything that this guy was trying to get me to. He goes, and I never played. He goes, I felt like I played, you know, I asked him, I was like, cause you were in that game seven, you had to play like 6 minutes in that game seven against Indiana. And he's like, without the way Mike treated me that year, I don't play the way I play in those 6 minutes. He goes, I was ready. I wasn't nervous. I got in, I knew I had a responsibility. And he goes, those things prepared me. But yeah, if you were to ask me just yes or no, Jordan jerk. Yeah. Total. Jerk.
The thing, my takeaway is, and we'll wrap it up, is that again, as much as it's floated as a documentary, which equals to most people some objective representation right. of what happened. Not. This is Michael's spin on his legacy. And he still comes off, in my opinion, pretty bad. I mean, he's not a felon or anything like that, but he's kind of this one-dimensional. He's, as I described him, he is both sides of the two stars of Whiplash. He is both the overbearing, evil dictator of a teacher, and he's also the student taking it all, pushing himself to get better. It's a, you know, he's both of those parts, and that's fine that he is the ultimate competitor, except for the fact that how many ultimate competitors step away not once but twice. The ultimate, all the Kevin Durant is he's a coward because he chased rings by going to a good team, and LeBron is had to go to Miami. Like, Jordan retired in 98 because he knew Pippen wasn't coming back. And by the way, the spin on that jibe that is like, yep, it was Krause and Reinsdorf. There was no way Pippen was ever coming back. It was over. So to take that parting shot, like, yep, we could have kept on going, but it wasn't up to me. Like, yeah, it was up to you, Michael. And by the way, you retired because the team wasn't going to be good and you didn't like that fact. And why KD and LeBron have to wear that, but you don't. Then you do. There was the little matter of the Washington Wizards. And by the way, after that, the humiliation, that you haven't even fluked your way into relevance as an executive. You know who has? Mario Lemieux, the greatest figure for one franchise in sports history. Throw your head around all you want, spaghetti. That's a statement of fact. That's an objective statement. That's documentary worthy. Throw your head around all you want, spaghetti.
I thought your issue with the documentary thing was that there is bias built in. If you were to oversee the Mario Lemieux documentary, there would be incredible bias included. It would not be a documentary. It would be a sports film, much like The Last Dance was a compelling and wildly entertaining sports film.
It wouldn't be very compelling because there's no dirt. The worst thing he ever did was the most disgraceful thing that people would piss at.
We got to wrap this up.
Is that he said he wouldn't order the fries with his sandwich coming off the golf course a month before the season got going. That's about as dirty as I got for 66. All right, we're gonna go now. I've had more than enough of all of you, but I look forward to doing it again next week.
Next week,
Spaghetti, I want you to get dolled up in your Friday best.
Yeah,
club shirt. Another club shirt.
By the way,
another Marv hat.
Last Dance, it ended perfectly too. That was the best part of the whole documentary.
Yeah, just ignored the 22 years of that.
I cranked the volume.
You know what he's getting at. You know what he's getting at.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yes.
Terrible Pearl Jam song.
Okay.
That's why he's saying it.
I always come out on top.
You always come out on top.
Always come out on top. See? All the shots come at me. I just stay quiet.
In the 04 draft. All right. Handsome Hank, what a pleasure. Matt Money Smith, double for you. Eddie Spaghetti, you look dynamite. I want you to spend the rest of the week in that outfit. Dude. Just unwashed, whatever. You're good. It'll be like, that's how you'll wean her off of trying to dress you like this. It's like finds the kid smoking a cigar, like, okay, now go in the closet and smoke those cigars.
The whole thing.
Wear that endlessly, and she'll be like, please get on disgusting orange tank top of Spider Mitchell again. All right. So I think we've said it all. There's we've nothing all. Left to be said. We'll talk to you in a week. Until then, for Hanson, Matt Money Smith, Eddie Spaghetti, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.